listening to On the Couch with Carly. Carly's couch is a safe space to talk. I'm a psychologist, but I'm not your pipe-smoking, tweed-wearing stereotype.
Okay, so welcome back to On the Couch with Carly. I am super excited about my guest today, Mr. Justice Mukeli. I know Justice personally and also have been following his work for over 12 years, I think, at this point. And I follow you on Instagram, and I have asked you to come chat to me today because you have recently become a father. And so, just to let everyone know who Justice is an amazing artist and filmmaker. Originally, I think you were really well known for your project I See a Different You, which has such amazing aesthetic quality that you know in those years, which was what, 10, 12 years ago, it was definitely one of the first of those kinds of projects that showed Soweto in particular, but showed African stories in such a beautiful light and changed a cultural narrative that I think is so important. And I think art is so beautiful in that way, that it can do that in ways that politics or literature, or not literature, but journalism can't really do. Like, it's something so beautiful that art can do. So I'm interested, and this is kind of my passion for this podcast and my work, is that I'm interested in kind of hearing from different people about topics that I find interesting. So at the moment, I've been really thinking about parenthood and motherhood in particular, because I became a mother almost 7 years ago and started doing all this work around the massive sort of transition that we take on when we become parents. But I feel like my work has been skewed to the motherhood experience, and I'm super curious about the fatherhood experience. And I really want to give voice and highlight the meaning that can be made through the father's experience, and also thinking about how someone like you, who's an artist, who's a visionary, can bring your insights to the space, because I think there's so much beauty there. So thanks so much for joining me today.
No, you're welcome. And thank you for that wonderful intro. Really makes me feel good for my little contribution to the creative space here in South Africa. And I'm still deep at it, obviously, in different mediums, both photography, painting, and film. And so it's been exciting. And the new medium, or the new chapter, is being a father, which is incredibly beautiful and incredibly challenging. But sure, it's such a beautiful contrast to be deep within the challenges of being a new parent, and alongside that, deep within the rewards of seeing this beautiful life unfold and seeing the world through her eyes. I've got a daughter, and she's 7 months now, and the most amazing gift that's happened to me. So super grateful to be talking about it and sharing my thoughts and insights. So
beautiful. So so I think, you know, where I'm curious to know is, like, what were your ideas about what parenthood was going to mean for you, or like maybe your dream for it, the fantasy that you had for, like, what having a baby would bring your life? And has the experience differed from that in any way?
I think it's safe to say, for me, in my own experience, when I met my wife 13 years ago, 12, 13, I knew instinctively that this is who I'd love to have a family with. I'd love for us to, you know, walk into the lights together and all that cool, cheesy stuff. That's amazing. And she wasn't sure if she wanted children, so that was a tough one. But I love her and loved her enough to be patient and see where things go. And fortunately, she accepted or changed, she had a change of heart that we should be parents. But the biggest thing for me about the dream to be a parent was honestly not realistic. I just thought, oh my goodness, we get a child and the child is here and it's cool. And I'm gonna do Instagram photos and he or she is gonna look like me, and I'm gonna look at what her eyes look like, or does she have my smile, or does she have my nose, or what of me is she gonna bring with her, and what of my personality? I looked at just those things, like, is she gonna look like me? Okay, cool. My wife looks like this, and these are the things I like about her. What of my wife is my child gonna have? So I was super curious and incredibly excited by that. And we fell pregnant. And you can imagine, having waited for 12 years, I was over the moon, and I couldn't believe it. I couldn't even wait the 9 months. I wished, they say, we're pregnant and the baby's here. And the 9 months was an incredible teacher, and a teacher of patience, to prepare me for the patience that's required when baby arrives, and also seeing my wife's body change over that time was such an interesting time, and also a reminder of the importance of men and women. I may be, genetically strong, or, it's expected that a man is stronger and all this and that. But the simplest way of putting that is, having witnessed what my wife went through in the 9 months, I can safely say, even in my strongest of strong as a man, I'd never be able to do what she did or go through what she went through. No way. Not even a month. I'm not interested. I couldn't. I don't have it in me. So that was an amazing teacher. And the 9 months also taught me, it reframed my idea of femininity and the strength of a woman, and our difference and the importance of leaning into both our different strengths. For example, in a controversial way, we are in pursuit of an equal world for both men and women. And I think there's something wrong about that, because we both possess different strengths. As a man, it's more natural for me to do the physical stuff, like build a house and do this and do that. And as a woman, it's probably more natural for women to be nurturing and, do the more harder work than we could do. Like, for example, carrying a child is not child's play, guys. But it made me respect my wife. It made me respect my woman in a whole other level. You literally see your wife's body change and the bones move around, and this little being inside of her move around. Like, women create life. I know we can say the seed comes from us, and without our seed, there's no life. Cool. But the human body of a man would never create life the way a woman body does. So that to me was incredibly enlightening. And seeing my daughter inside my wife's tummy and moving around, and sometimes I'd say, "Hello, Baba," whatever, and she would respond to that. And yeah, then also the sleepless nights, the morning sickness. Guys, I don't know a man that, maybe we can say, yeah, I can do it. And it's easy to say you can do it, because it will never happen to you. But that was an incredible teacher. But to come back to your answer, I think I was more drawn to the dream and the cute things, without understanding the reality of what hits you when the baby's here. And what hit me was, first of all, there's no turning back. You can't say, "Psych, I'm tired, guys. I can't do this. Take her back." You can't do that. So she arrived, and I was obviously excited. And I remember the day she was born, She was a natural birth. And I was there, and helping, holding. If I could push, I would push, but I can't. And I was both at the back and in the front. I was all in it. And it was incredible. It was like, whew, like I've never felt that level of adrenaline. And she came into my arms and I held her and she started crying and I held her and she relaxed a bit. Then I cut the umbilical cord and I put on my chest and she fell asleep.
Wow.
And in that all that moment, just I was so emotional. I mean, throughout I was just present and in there then, but when I heard a voice, I burst into tears involuntarily. That, oh my goodness, here's this little friend of ours we've been waiting for 9 months, and there she is alive and kicking. And I put her on my chest, and she felt at home and she relaxed and slept. Then, yeah, the doctors helped my wife, and I was right there. Guys, it's if you can and you are strong enough to be in that moment with your wife, it's amazing. It's the most beautiful thing I've ever experienced. In some way, it feels like I was also reborn. It was the birth of me again. And shoo, yeah, anyway, very emotional, very powerful.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, I just, I think what you're saying is so interesting because the what feels juxtaposed to me is this fantasy, and I think we all start out like this, actually, is this, and I remember sort of admitting this from the beginning. I was like, I'm having children for selfish reasons. I just want to see a little bit
Yeah.
me in the world, you know, like that's the idea you have, like you know, like, and you think of how it's going to be cute, and like you said, the Instagram photos, all of that, and like for me, that the shift is that you are, before you have a child, you are a sort of individual in the world. You're a single entity, and yes, you have your partner, but and there's a union, but you're still like a single individual entity, and so you are just automatically more selfish, more egotistical, more narcissistic, whatever you want to call it, naturally, so not like a pathology wise. And then something shifts when you have a baby, and it's, I think there's something so humbling about the process. Like for you to say from the beginning it was humbling, even before the baby was born, watching your wife take that role on and have her body move and shape and shift in the way it did. And you were standing there sort of watching it, you know, in awe, sort of just noticing it. There's something quite humbling about that even. And then the baby's born, and it's almost like your individual self gets like eclipsed in that moment, and this being comes into the space, and you almost get wiped out, and then, as you say, reborn again in this new role. And the new role is you are a di like what we would call a dyad. You know, you are now one of two people. You are the father to a child. You are now in that role. It's so that's so interesting that I picked up that's what you were saying and what you were experiencing.
No, for sure. I think, the very, very obvious thing is I could feel a change happen inside of me, especially the day she was born. I felt a huge shift spiritually, even cellularly, in my DNA. I could feel that it's not the same. I'm not the same. And yeah, then you've got this little human and you take home with you, and all that excitedness of the Instagram photos, and it all leaves the room because, life is not about those little cheesy memories you think you're going to make. Stakes are high. For me, stakes were high. How do I keep her alive? How do I, I got concerned. I got so nervous. Like, I was so nervous when we took her home with us. And in hindsight, now that she's 7 months, I think those were probably the easier times. Like, because she just eats and sleeps and eats and sleeps. But I mean, I'm a father for the first time, and you get to be a father for the first time only once. And,
Yes.
you know, I've got friends that have children and have had children that are even almost as old as I am. And all of them said, you know, take it in, be present. This is the easier stage. Enjoy her. You know, it gets a bit more challenging and a bit more rewarding. But I was so nervous. My wife and I were so nervous that I could feel every second of every minute of every hour of the day and the weeks and the month. You know, I think our head got out the water maybe the third month when we had to travel down to Cape Town with for a holiday. Then it felt like, oh, okay, we've got a bit of a grip. But sure, yeah, it's very scary. It's very exciting. You know, the cheesy things I was looking forward to didn't even occupy my mind. Like, what do her eyes look like? Does she have my eyes? You know, does that even matter? You know,
Yeah.
at that, when stakes are high, you can't even think of things like that. Like, who does she look like? You know,
Yeah.
but yeah, those things leave the
But
room and.
just tell me more about that. So you said you spoke about your nervousness and the stakes are high. What, like you said, it's about keeping her alive. And I think that that's something that we actually don't even consider, that keeping an infant alive is actually a huge responsibility. But just tell me exactly what were
Huge.
some of the gritty worries that you had and the thoughts that ran through your mind at that time when you were so occupied with that?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, she's experiencing life for the first time. Well, in this realm with us. And we need to teach her how to eat. You know, how to suck a poop, even though some of those things are reflex and instinctive, and you know, but you need to wake her up and, you know, make sure that she's eating right. You know, there's so much information on the internet, you don't know what's right and what's wrong. You know, like they say, yeah, she must eat every 2 hours, and someone says, no, you must feed her as much as she can eat, then. When she starts crying or when she wakes up, that's when you feed her. So then the nervousness of which one is right is scary, you know. Then this is how long she needs to sleep. You know, she at this time she needs to be doing this. At this time she needs to be doing. There's so much information. Then, you know, after she eats, you need to burp her. If you don't burp her, she's gonna have hiccups and hiccups. And you know, there's so much. Small things. I know that one of the things that were really tough for me were hiccups after eating. Like I have to burp it. So I enjoyed it, but you don't know if she's gonna burp. Then you put her down and she sleeps. You think she's sleeping, then she wakes up screaming. Then we are both worried and scared. Okay, you remember? Okay, if she was sleeping and she wakes up screaming, maybe try burp it because maybe. That's the thing. Then you try burping. Now you're burping her for 30 minutes. Nothing is happening. And you put her down again. Then then you have to do it this way. Then you have to put her on your lap. Then you have to. It's chess, you know? So that
I stay.
stuff. Yeah, that stuff worried me because it humbled me that, you know, I don't know everything. I don't, you know, in that very moment, I'm a child again. I'm learning with it, you know, and yeah, then you take her to the pediatrician and they say, hey, her weight is not good. You're not feeding her enough. Then we are scared again. Okay, you need to give her the bottle and milk. Then you hear, no, giving her the boob strictly is best for her. So much,
Yeah.
so much. Then the thing that I had to learn with my wife is that every child is different and nothing that you do is wrong. Do what's right for you and your child. You know, like other people will say, yeah, she needs to do tummy time. My daughter didn't like tummy time. She cried when we tried to do tummy time. And I don't have the heart to hold her, to let her do that and let my daughter cry. There's no way. I couldn't. Right then, there's sleep training. They say you must put her down and walk out the room and she must cry. I'm like, there's no way. I'm not going to punish my child. No way. So, yeah, then other people think it's right. I used to think it's right, but when my daughter was here and I put her down and she started crying, I don't have the heart to let my daughter cry. So my wife and I put her together. We've got a sleep strategy. From 7:30 or 7 p.m., she naps with me. Then at midnight or 1 a.m., 1:30, she moves over to my wife so that she can feed and have her second session of sleeping. Other people will say, yeah, just put her in her cot, walk away. Yeah, it works for other people, definitely not for me, So all those things are super overwhelming. But the thing I learned is that do what feels right for you and nothing is wrong.
Oh, I love that. I love that. That's brilliant. Do what feels right for you. Nothing is wrong.
Simple. Nothing is wrong. Like for me, I know I was born in Soweto. I got raised by my beautiful parents. And the way they fed me, they did a weird strategy thing where they block your nose and put food in your mouth so that I don't spit it out. When I look at how that thing is done, it's horrifying. I could never do that to my daughter. But look at me, I'm strong, I'm athletic, so there's no wrong way. What's right is what you want to
What you're
do.
picking up on is the sort of change, in parenting strategies over generations. What I'm really noticing in what you're speaking about, and I think it's so important, like from a psychological perspective, the terror that you feel when you take home a newborn baby, that's how they're designed. They're actually, that's the correct feeling. Like the way they're designed, the way their cries are so piercing and they act like the world is coming to an end with their like, have a burp, for example, trapped or whatever, the fact that it is such a high intensity for them and that intensity that our job is to actually take that in, to sort of hold that inside of us, to metabolize those emotions ourselves. That's like the most important role that we can play in their lives. Not what we do with that information, but the fact that we actually are taking it in and thinking about it and holding it in our bodies and our psyches. What I'm recognizing is that you, as her father, it feels the way you're storying it, that you were taking it in as much as mom
100%.
was. And I want to ask you, does that feel like that's common for fathers that you know? Was it the case in previous generations in your family?
Yeah, interesting question. I mean, I asked my mom not long ago about what it was like for her. She's had four of us, and my twin brother and I, who were her twins. And she says, in our culture, the dad shouldn't be with the mom in the same room, I believe, for something like 3 months. I'm not 100% sure. So they can be in the same house, but she should just be with the kids in the room, in her bedroom, for 3 months. And she said, my dad said, there's no way. He's not going to be able to do that. These are her kids and are his kids, and he's going to be with his kids in his bedroom with his wife, and he's going to feed his kids. He's going to be there, which I was surprised. My dad was an incredible present and loving father until I was 12. Then it shifted, but I experienced his love and the compassion and presence in his life as a friend and as a father. And I believe that it makes sense what my mom said. And I feel like when my daughter came, it was clear to me. I remember just saying to her, seeing her go through her paces in the pregnancy. And I just said to her, if you can just deliver this little person, I'll do all the dirty work. I'm here for it. And that was a promise I made her and myself, because I've wanted a child way more than she did. So I just said, you know what? I'm very grateful that you are gifting us this little human. And once she's here, I'm all over it. You'll get your time back and all that stuff. And yeah, I mean, I do have friends that are fathers, and I'd like to think fatherhood is unique to individuals. I think I wouldn't want to look at it as this is how it should be, because I think as people, we have different agencies, we've got different intentions, and the nuance of our unspoken agreement in relationships, or even spoken agreements in relationships, are different. For example, my wife wasn't sure if she wanted children. I wanted children way more than her. So the contract that was spoken and unspoken between us was that when our daughter arrives, I'm taking over everything. I'll do as much as I can with the time that I have, so that she doesn't have to, carry that load mostly alone,
So
So,
that's your individual couple journey. But I mean, it does feel like it's, I mean, if I kind of, I want to say like, would be great if it was the gold standard as well. You know, it would be, I mean, I know it's not possible
I
for
think
every
so.
and for every dad, but I guess what I see as the benefit of that is that, and maybe you can speak to this, but like you actually, because you took in that experience in the way you did early on, I'm sure you have a relationship with your daughter and a you benefit from it as well. So maybe you can speak to that a little bit, like.
I mean, my daughter, it's very clear. Maybe I'm being biased because my wife is not here, but she says it too. I'm her favorite little person. I'm her by far. Like, in terms of, I'm the one that we asked, my wife and I, when she was pregnant, we had the conversation, and I asked her if it's possible for her to step back from work and just give her a bit of her time, maybe 2 years or a year, depending on how she feels, just on raising our daughter, and being the primary caregiver in terms of time and whatever. Because I go to work, but what I've done is my day starts specifically. So I leave the house between 8:30 and 9, and I make sure that I'm back home at 3:30, so that I can take my daughter from there, and she's with me till she goes to bed. I mean, with me, she's with us, but I'm able to go on a walk with her. She loves walking. She's super curious. I love walking, and I love exercise. So I find it amazing to do a bit of cardio in form of walking with her for like an hour in the neighborhood, and we look at trees and flowers, and I tell her stories. But that stuff has created, I mean, she's only 7 months, but it has created an incredible bond between her and I. And she has a specific bond with my wife, her mom. Then she's got a specific bond with me, where, even now when I leave home, she cries because she was like, damn, my friend is leaving me. And when I come back and I walk into the house and we lock eyes and I want to go wash my hands before I pick her up, she cries because she doesn't even want a minute gone from me not being in my arms. But yeah, I think there's something for me, there's something so special in creating this safe space and a beautiful bond and friendship with my daughter now. I mean, as I said, I'm a father for the first time, but yeah, I can envision our life when she's like 15, 20. If we have the blessing of consistency and time together, that our bond will grow even stronger. And I think, kids that are loved the right way don't seek love out in the street that is not good for them. Because we need to be the example of the love we hope they gravitate towards out there in the world. And Raising
That's it.
children is also a form of healing generational traumas and just our own traumas. And hopefully, we set them out to a slightly better start than ours, you know? Yeah.
And talking about your start, I mean, it does sound like your dad's sort of choice to be in the room with you as infants. You know, that sort of thing lives inside of our bodies, right? So it's almost like that capacity to be present as a father in that way was already in you. And I think, you know, I think that's something to acknowledge. But
Yeah, for sure.
I wanted to ask you something, which was, we're talking about the rewards and the benefits of the bond and everything, and I think that that is beautiful. But real talk, there's challenges to becoming a parent, sacrifices
Way, way
have
more
to be
challenges.
made. So tell me, like, if you had to sort of speak to a father who's maybe his partner's pregnant and the baby hasn't been born yet, and you were to say, look, this is a heads up to you. I need you to know ahead of time. These are the things I wish I'd known ahead of time before I became a dad that I had no idea about, and be prepared. What kinds of things would you sort of want someone else to know? Like, what was some of the big challenges for you?
The huge and biggest eye-opener was that shouldn't I, if I wasn't there for my wife when, you know, in that time, even now, something as small as going to the bathroom becomes incredibly challenging. Like, you know, you think, you know, because without a child, you think you've got freedom of movement. Oh, I can just up and do this. You know, I can just drive out and go get a burger or whatever. All those things shift because you need to now consider this other little human. And she's got her own time that she works with, you know, like, you know, I love to eat out like a lot, you know, and I love to go to the gym, you know, I love freedom of movement. But when a child arrives, you know, you that changes, especially if you want to do right by your partner. Because I think for us as men, we can be excused systematically. You know, that he needs to go to work, a man needs to do this, and a man needs to do that, and it's systematically accepted. But yeah, like there are huge challenges. The simplest thing I can say, there's incredible mental load, which is something that, you know, sometimes words can't articulate what that feels like. You know, we think, you know, some men will say, yeah, man, especially men that are co-parenting, they'll say the mother of their children is overreacting and she's being unreasonable. She's, you know, because they are not there to experience the mental load. And some of the things that are mental load are the constant thinking about, is she okay? Has she eaten? Is she breathing? You know, simple movements become difficult. You know, not everyone can afford to have a night nurse and a nanny and a helper. You know, I would imagine people that can afford those things will think less about the mental load stuff that, you know, exhaust you. You know, then imagine as a woman, either a C-section or natural birth, you know, from that very moment when the baby has arrived, stakes are high. She needs to eat, and she needs to eat from your body. You know, seeing that is very difficult. My wife just had this huge traumatic experience. And within the hour or within the 30 minutes, she needs to be feeding this thing, this person. She needs to hold her. You know, then we get home, and I, as a man, because I'm systematically excused, I'm thinking that I need to just go get a beer with the boys because Jesus, that was a hectic 24 hours. But it's still going on. You know, who's gonna relieve your wife unless you've got a night nurse, you've got your mom there, you've got a nanny, you've got all those people. Personally, for me and my wife, we decided that we want to see it through ourselves. Then we'll get a nanny, after some time, because we want to build the bond with her. And that was tough, and it really made me rethink the idea of having a second child because it's not easy, So, but the biggest challenge, I think, that is a huge negative or real is mental load. And mental load is something that, like, my wife gave birth, her body shifted, even emotionally and spiritually, she shifted. There's postpartum, she needs to be getting herself out of that trauma or that experience of her body delivering this beautiful human to us. And as soon as the little human is here with us, anxiety hits because will she be able to provide milk with her own breasts? There's a lot of information on the internet saying you should never give your child milk or whatever the supplementary stuff because this and this. But what if her body isn't producing milk at the time that it's needed? Then she's got a depression. And then she has to deal with a husband or a man that say, geez, love, this was a lot. I just need to go to the boys for an hour. I need to have a drink and clear my head. What can she do that you have access to as a man to clear her head? Nothing. She can't drink a beer because her body needs to feed this little person. She can't go smoke a joint. She has nothing. The most she can do is probably a Panado, but not even if she can avoid it. So for me, those things were very difficult. To just see the privilege of being a man was hugely challenging. And I had to also snap out of it that, buddy, why are you having a pity party for your privilege? You need to stand up and go make food. You need to take the baby when the baby is fed. You need to, if she's crying, hold her. Do give time to your wife so that she can blow off some steam, because she can't go have a beer or smoke a joint. So that was very challenging to me, Still is,
It's sacrifices. There's something you have to lose in that process. It's something from your old life that you have to grieve and mourn in a way. If you can actually take that on. I mean, I think a lot of men don't. And even the fact that you know about mental load puts you in a very small percentage of men, to be honest, because the majority are taking that privilege and running with it, like we know we do with privilege. It's easier to do that with privilege, to just
No,
enjoy
for sure.
it mindlessly,
No, for sure.
invisibly. So I think that's incredible justice. And I guess where I'm curious is how has this knowledge, this, like, I mean, it's only been 7 months, but you've sort of entered into a new universe, really. How has this new awareness impacted your work, your ideas about art? And do you have any ideas about, or maybe you've already created art that you feel is like a way to translate this experience for other people to get some understanding or to like shift the conversation culturally? I'm like, have you thought about it much?
Yeah, I have. I mean, the journey of pregnancy and our daughter arriving changed me, like, incredibly so. I think I'm hugely sensitive now, sensitive to everything around me. It feels like I've got new eyes because, I'm now seeing the world through my daughter's eyes, like even hearing. Sometimes when I'm holding her and I'm trying to open the curtains, and children are sensitive to sounds. And when I'm opening the curtain, because sounds affect them so much, hearing that sound for the first time scared her. And seeing her body tremble and the little fear from that was like super interesting. Anyway, but I'm so fortunate that I work across many disciplines, and the first artistic expression or work I was able to do or work on was a commercial film about a father and his daughter. And when I was working on it, we were still pregnant, but it helped me tap into, a projected experience of what fatherhood would be. And that story that we were working on was a story of a father trying to reconnect with his teenage daughter. And without the lived experience of being a father to a daughter, but with the projected experience of being a father to a daughter, I was able to tap into a part of myself and ask myself, when the time comes when my daughter feels she's smarter than me and she's doesn't need all that cute treatment and we can't be friends as we used to be, and I'm not as clever and cool as she thought, what will I do to appeal to her or to be able to reconnect with her, with my little angel, as she's been all these years, That was amazing. It was an amazing experience to work on that little film. And it was a film, a TikTok commercial. It was a film for TikTok. And the premise of the story was, this dad's daughter, she's now a little teenager. She's into music and she doesn't find him as interesting as he used to be. And she's into music. And we see the journey of the dad going through his paces to try reconnect with his daughter, and he goes out and he learns this instrument that she enjoys, and it's in this song that she loves, and that effort, reconnects them. And that was such an amazing experience to go into. Then after that, I got to make a film again for Spur Restaurant. And the film was about a dad and his daughter and their tradition of going to these Spur restaurants for her birthday. And they celebrate her birthday with the dad from when she's like 4 or 5 to when she's like a grown woman until the dad passes away and the daughter continues the tradition. And also, my daughter had arrived by then, and being a father made me so sensitive because these experiences feel like they're my own, and the pain or the emotions, really hit home because I can relate, even though I haven't lived through them, I can imagine it, I can project those feelings and take them on. So it's been beautiful. I'm super excited about the work I'm going to create in painting and in photography because I'm going to further interrogate the presence of a man in, the upbringing of children. How do we create a new narrative that it becomes the new standard or that okays these efforts to be a dad that is present in a different way, not to say other dads were not present, I'll give you an example. I've got a very close friend who has two children, and one of his children is my godson. So, and he's an incredible father to his children. And we had this conversation, and obviously, I'm a new dad, and I lean into some of my friends who are dads for insight. And I was expressing to him that, yo, bro, I'm tired. The sleep cycles, this and that. And he made a comment that was very tough to hear. And I understood it. He said, the challenges of modern men and modern fatherhood is that men want to be mothers. And that's not how nature works. And when he said that, it felt offensive, but I wanted to hear him out. And I reminded myself that, not everyone's view is wrong. Not everyone's way of doing things is right. I feel that my contribution to my daughter's life should be as it is, which I think I go further than what the expected father is expected to do, you know. And
Mm.
my friend said to me, "Yeah, bruh, you're trying to be a mom. That's why you're tired. You know, men need to be men. You need to go to work. You need to provide for your children. You need to be strong so that, you know, you can be a stronger presence for your children, not, you know, be the role of a mother. Why are you doing bath time? You know, and not just him, other men, you know, why do you bath your child? Why do you put your child to bed? You know, why are you splitting feminine responsibilities with your wife? That's what she should do. You know, you're out there working. Why are you feeling bad for being at work till late? You know, what about the life you're providing? You know, and in my personal opinion, what I bring as a man to the table is this much. You know, being able to provide a salary or an income has nothing to being able to provide safety and security and a constant loving presence to your child, you know, and a constant knowing of what to do when she's coughing, when, you know, something is not right, she turned red, you know, her poo isn't looking how it should look. Is should we be worried about this? We need to take her to the vaccine. I don't, as a man, some of those things are things that systematically I don't have to think about. But going out there and breaking my back to earn whatever I earn to be able to pay for our house and our car and whatever, that's so easy. You know, looking at how your child is breathing, is the breathing regular? You know, there's something wrong with this poo. She's had three different types of poo, or in her other poo there was blood, you know,
But I
or,
think what you're
you
saying, and I
know.
think this speaks, something, it's a theme in your work even prior to becoming a dad, is that what you're saying is that there's a limited idea of what masculinity is, and that you're challenging that we can include more in this definition of masculinity. It can be
True.
it we can include the tasks of caregiving as a masculine
Yes.
role, and that just makes it a more beautiful, a more whole, a more spacious existence for you, actually. It offers you
Thank you.
more to stand in. And so I'm really excited about the work you're doing and the role
Thank
you're
you.
playing in this person's life. I think the way you've spoken today is so incredible. You are an incredible role model for fathers, and
Thank you.
I hope that this conversation reaches young men. I really hope that we that you start to have these conversations more and more and bring it into your work more and more, because this is beautiful. This is how the world is changing, and I think it's changing for the better. I think we're going in the right direction if this is how dads are thinking now.
For
And
sure.
I'm excited for that. I'm excited for the privilege that you have, but also the power and responsibility that you have as a filmmaker, as an artist, to bring these ideas forth. So thank
Yeah,
you so
thank
much for
you.
your time. I unfortunately have to rush off because I've got another meeting now,
That's
but it
okay.
was
We've said a
so
mouthful.
awesome to speak to you, Justice, and I
Thank
just
you.
all the best.
Thank you. Thank you.
Go, Dad. It's
Thank
amazing. It's amazing to see and to hear the way you're thinking about this. And
you.
thank you.
Thanks. Thanks for the space to speak. And yeah, I hope this reaches a lot of people.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Thank you so much. Speak soon.
Speak soon. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.